Harper Audio presents Solitaire by Alice Oseman, performed by Jane Entwistle. And your defect is a propensity to hate everybody. And yours, he replied with a smile, is willfully to misunderstand them. Pride and Prejudice, Jane Austen. Part 1. Elizabeth Bennet. Do you dance, Mr. Darcy? Mr. Darcy. Not if I can help it. Pride and Prejudice, 2005. Chapter 1. I am aware, as I step into the common room, that the majority of people here are almost dead, including me. I have been reliably informed that post-Christmas blues are entirely normal, and that we should expect to feel somewhat numb after the happiest time of the year. But I don't feel so different now to how I felt on Christmas Eve, or on Christmas Day, or on any other day since the Christmas holiday started. I'm back now, and it's another year. Nothing is going to happen. I stand there. Becky and I look at each other.
Tori, says Becky, you look a little bit like you want to kill yourself.
She and the rest of our lot have sprawled themselves over a collection of swivel chairs around the common room computer desks. As it's the first day back, there has been a widespread hair and makeup effort across the entire sixth form, and I immediately feel inadequate. I deflate into a chair and nod philosophically. It's funny, because it's true. She looks at me some more but doesn't really look, and we laugh at something that wasn't funny. Becky then realizes that I am in no mood to do anything, so she moves away. I lean into my arms and fall half asleep. My name is Victoria Spring. I think you should know that I make up a lot of stuff in my head and then get sad about it. I like to sleep, and I like to blog. I am going to die someday. Rebecca Allen is probably my only real friend at the moment. She is also probably my best friend. I am as yet unsure whether these two facts are related. In any case, Becky Allen is very pretty and has very long purple hair. It has come to my attention that if you have purple hair, people often look at you. If you are pretty with purple hair, people often stay looking at you, thus resulting in you becoming a widely recognized and outstandingly popular figure in adolescent society. The sort of figure that everyone claims to know, yet probably hasn't even spoken to. She has 2,098 friends on Facebook. Right now, Becky's talking to this other girl from our lot, Evelyn Foley. Evelyn is considered retro because she has messy hair and wears a necklace with a triangle on it.
The real question is, though, says Evelyn, is there sexual tension between Harry and Malfoy?
I'm not sure whether Becky genuinely likes Evelyn. Sometimes I think people only pretend to like each other.
Only in fan fictions, Evelyn, says Becky. Please, keep your fantasies between yourself and your blog.
Evelyn laughs.
I'm just saying, Malfoy helps Harry in the end, right? He's a nice guy deep down, yeah? So why does he bully Harry for 7 years? Enormous, closet, homosexual.
With each word, she claps her hands together. It really doesn't emphasize her point.
It's a well-established fact that people tease people they fancy. The psychology here is unarguable. Evelyn, says Becky, Firstly, I resent the fangirl idea that Draco Malfoy is some kind of beautifully tortured soul who is searching for redemption and understanding. Secondly, the only non-canon couple that is even worth discussion is Snilly.
Snilly?
Snape and Lily?
Evelyn appears to be deeply offended.
I can't believe you don't support Drarry when you ship Snape and Lily. I mean, at least Drarry is a realistic possibility.
She slowly shakes her head.
Like, obviously Lily went for someone hot and hilarious like James Potter. James Potter was a resplendent twat, especially to Lily. JK made that quite clear. And dude, if you don't like Snape by the end of the series, then you miss the entire concept of Harry Potter.
If Snilly had been a thing, there would have been no Harry Potter.
Without a Harry, Voldemort might not have, like, committed mass genocide.
Becky turns to me, and so does Evelyn. I deduce that I am under pressure to contribute something. I sit up.
You're saying that because it's Harry's fault that all these muggles and wizards died, it would have been better if there'd been no Harry Potter at all, and no books or films or anything?
I get the impression that I've ruined this conversation, so I mumble an excuse and lift myself off my chair and hurry out of the common room door.
Sometimes I hate people. This is probably very bad for my mental health.
There are two grammar schools in our town. Harvey Green Grammar School for Girls, or Higgs, as it is popularly known, and Truham Grammar School for Boys. Both schools, however, accept males and females into years 12 and 13, the two final years of school known countrywide as sixth form. So now that I am in year 12, I have had to face a sudden influx of the male species. Boys at Higgs are on a par with mythical creatures, and having an actual real boyfriend puts you at the height of the social hierarchy. But personally, thinking or talking too much about boy issues makes me want to shoot myself in the face. And even if I did care about that stuff, it's not like we get to show off, thanks to our stunning school uniform. Usually, sixth formers do not have to wear uniforms. However, Higgs sixth form are forced to wear a hideous one. Grey is the theme, which is fitting for such a dull place. I arrive at my locker to find a pink post-it note on its door. On that, someone has drawn a left-pointing arrow, suggesting that I should, perhaps, look in that direction. Irritated, I turn my head to the left. There's another post-it note a few lockers along, and on the wall at the end of the corridor, another. People are walking past them, totally oblivious. What can I say? People aren't observant. People don't question stuff like this. They never think twice about déjà vu when there could be a glitch in the matrix. They walk past tramps in the street without even glancing at their misfortune. They don't psychoanalyze the creators of slasher horrors when they're probably all psychopaths. I pluck the post-it from my locker and wander to the next. Sometimes I like to fill my days with little things that other people don't care about. It makes me feel like I'm doing something important, mainly because no one else is doing it. This is one of those times. The post-its start popping up all over the place. Like I said, everyone is ignoring them. Instead, they are going on with their day and talking about boys and clothes and pointless stuff. Year 9s and 10s strut around in their rolled-up skirts and thigh-high socks over their tights. Year 9s and 10s always seem to be happy. It makes me hate them a bit. Then again, I hate quite a lot of things. The penultimate post-it I find depicts an arrow pointing upward, or forward, and is situated on the door of a closed computer room on the second floor. Black fabric covers the door window. This particular computer room, C16, was closed last year for refurbishment,
but it doesn't look like anyone's bothered getting started. It sort of makes me feel sad, to tell you the truth. But I open C-16's door anyway, enter, and close it behind me. There's one long window stretching the length of the far wall, and the computers in here are bricks. Solid cubes. Apparently, I've time-travelled to the 1990s. I find the final post-it note on the back wall, bearing a URL. solitaire.co.uk. In case you live under a rock, or are homeschooled, or are just an idiot, Solitaire is a card game played by yourself. It's what I used to spend my IT lessons doing, and it probably did a lot more for my intelligence than actually paying attention. It's then that someone opens the door.
Dear God, the age of the computers in here must be a criminal offence.
I turn slowly around. A boy stands in the doorway.
I can hear the haunting symphony of dial-up connection, he says, eyes drifting.
And after several long seconds, he finally notices that he's not the only person in the room. He's a very ordinary-looking, not ugly, but not hot, miscellaneous boy. His most noticeable feature is a pair of large, thick-framed square glasses, the sort similar to those 3D cinema glasses that 12-year-olds pop the lenses out of and wear because they think it makes them look rad. God, I hate it when people wear glasses like that. He's tall and has a side part. In one hand he holds a mug, in the other a piece of paper and his school planner. As he absorbs my face, his eyes flare up, and I swear to God they double in size. He leaps toward me like a pouncing lion, fiercely enough that I stumble backward in fear that he might crush me completely. He leans forward so that his face is inches from my own. Through my reflection in his ridiculously oversized spectacles, I notice that he has one blue eye and one green eye. Heterochromia. He grins violently.
Victoria Spring! He cries, raising his arms in the air.
I say and do nothing. I have a headache.
You are Victoria Spring, he says.
He holds the piece of paper up to my face. It's a photograph. Of me. Underneath, in tiny letters, Victoria Spring, 11A. It has been on display near the staff room. In year 11, I was a form leader, mostly because no one else wanted to do it, so I got volunteered. All the form leaders had their pictures taken. Mine is awful. It's before I cut my hair, so I sort of look like the girl from The Ring. It's like I don't even have a face. I look into the blue eye. Did you tear that right off the display? He steps back a little, retreating from his invasion of my personal space. He's got this insane smile on his face.
I said I'd help someone look for you.
He taps his chin with his planner.
Blonde guy, skinny trousers, walking around like he didn't really know where he was.
I do not know any guys, and certainly not any blonde guys who wear skinny trousers. I shrug. How did you know I was in here? He shrugs too.
I didn't. I came in because of the arrow on the door. I thought it looked quite mysterious. And here you are. What a hilarious act of fate.
He takes a sip of his drink. I start to wonder if this boy has mental problems.
I've seen you before, he says, still smiling.
I find myself squinting at his face. Surely I must have seen him at some point in the corridors. Surely I would remember those hideous glasses.
I don't think I've ever seen you before. That's not surprising, he says. I'm in year 13, so you wouldn't see me much. And I only joined your school last September. I did my year 12 at Truham.
That explains it. 4 months isn't enough time for me to commit a face to memory.
So, he says, tapping his mug,
What's going on here?
I step aside and point unenthusiastically to the post-it on the back wall. He reaches up and peels it off.
Solitaire.co.uk. Interesting.
Okay, I'd say we could boot up one of these computers and check it out, but we probably both expire before Internet Explorer loaded. I bet you any money they all use Windows 95.
He sits down on one of the swivel chairs and stares out of the window at the suburban landscape. Everything is lit up like it's on fire. You can see right over the town and into the countryside. He notices me looking too.
It's like it's pulling you out, isn't it? He says.
He sighs to himself, like a girl.
I saw this old man on my way in this morning. He was sitting at a bus stop, listening to an iPod, tapping his hands on his knees, looking at the sky. How often do you see that? An old man listening to an iPod. I wonder what he was listening to. You'd think it would be classical, but it could have been anything. I wonder if it was sad music.
He lifts up his feet and crosses them on top of a table.
I hope it wasn't.
Sad music is okay, I say, in moderation. He swivels around to me and straightens his tie.
You are definitely Victoria Spring, aren't you?
This should be a question, but he says it like he's already known for a long time.
Tori, I say, intentionally monotone. My name is Tori.
He laughs at me. It's a very loud, forced laugh.
Like Tori Amos?
No.
Pause.
No, not like Tori Amos. He puts his hands in his blazer pockets. I fold my arms.
Have you been in here before? He asks.
No. He nods.
Interesting.
I widen my eyes and shake my head at him.
What?
What, what?
What's interesting?
I don't think I could sound less interested.
We both came looking for the same thing.
And what is that?
An answer.
I raise my eyebrows. He gazes at me through his glasses. The blue eye is so pale, it's almost white. It's got an entire personality of its own.
Aren't mysteries fun? He says. Don't you wonder?
It's then that I realize that I probably don't. I realize that I could walk out of here and literally not give a crap about solitaire.co.uk or this annoying loudmouth guy ever again. But because I want him to stop being so goddamn patronizing, I swiftly remove my phone from my blazer pocket, type solitaire.co.uk into the internet address bar, and open up the web page. What appears almost makes me laugh. It's an empty blog. A troll blog, I guess.
What a pointless, pointless day this is.
I thrust the phone into his face.
Mystery solved, Sherlock.
At first, he keeps on grinning, like I'm joking. But soon, his eyes focus inward onto the phone screen. And in a kind of stunned disbelief, he removes the phone from my hand.
It's an empty blog, he says.
Not to me, but to himself. And suddenly, and I don't know how this happens, I feel deeply, deeply sorry for him. Because he looks so bloody sad. He shakes his head and hands my phone back to me. I don't really know what to do. He literally looks like someone's just died.
I shuffle my feet.
I'm going to form now. My form tutor keeps marking me as late in the register, so...
No, no, wait!
He jumps up so we're facing each other. There is a significantly awkward pause. He studies me, squinting.
then studies the photograph, then back to me, then back to the photo.
You cut your hair.
I bite my lip, holding back the sarcasm. Yes, I say sincerely. Yes, I cut my hair.
It was so long.
Yes, it was.
Why did you cut it?
I had gone shopping by myself at the end of the summer holidays because there was so much crap I needed for sixth form, and Mum and Dad were busy with all the Charlie stuff that was going on, and I just wanted it out of the way. What I'd failed to remember was that I am awful at shopping. My old school bag was ripped and dirty, so I trailed through nice places, River Island and Zara and Urban Outfitters, and Mango and Accessorize. But all the nice bags there were like £50, so that wasn't happening. Then I tried the cheaper places, New Look and Primark and H&M, but all the bags there were just tacky. I ended up going round all the shops selling bags a billion bloody times before having a slight breakdown on a bench by Costa Coffee in the middle of the shopping centre. I thought about starting year 12 and all the things that I needed to do, and all the new people that I might have to meet, and all the people I would have to talk to. And I caught a reflection of myself in a Waterstones window, and I realised then that most of my face was covered up. And who in the name of God would want to talk to me like that? And I started to feel all this hair on my forehead and my cheeks, and how it plastered my shoulders and back, and I felt it creeping around me like worms, choking me to death. I felt myself start to breathe very fast, so I went straight into the nearest hairdresser's and had it all cut to my shoulders and out of my face. The hairdresser didn't want to do it, but I was very insistent. I spent my school bag money on a haircut. I just wanted it shorter, I say. He steps closer. I shuffle backward. You, he says, do not say anything you mean, do you? I laugh. It's a pathetic sort of expulsion of air, but for me, that qualifies as a laugh. Who are you? He freezes, leans back, opens out his arms as if he is the second coming of Christ, and announces in a deep and echoing voice,
My name is Michael Holden.
Michael Holden.
And who are you, Victoria Spring?
I can't think of anything to say, because that is what my answer would be, really. Nothing. I am a vacuum. I am void. I am nothing. Mr. Kent's voice blares abruptly from the loudspeaker. I turn around and look up at the speaker as his voice resonates down.
All sixth formers should make their way to the common room for a short sixth form meeting.
When I turn back around, the room is empty. I'm glued to the carpet. I open my hand and find the solitaire.co.uk post-it inside it. I don't know at what point the post-it made its way from Michael Holden's hand to my own. But there it is. And this, I suppose, is it. This is probably how it starts. Chapter 2. The large majority of teenagers who attend Higgs are soulless, conformist idiots. I have successfully integrated myself into a small group of girls who I consider to be good people. But sometimes I still feel that I might be the only person with a consciousness, like a video game protagonist, and everyone else is a computer-generated extra with only a select few actions, such as initiate meaningless conversation and hug. The other thing about Higgs teenagers, and maybe most teenagers, is that they put very little effort into 90% of everything. I don't think that this is a bad thing, because there will be lots of time for effort later in our lives, and trying too hard at this point is a waste of energy that might otherwise be spent on lovely things, such as sleeping and eating and illegally downloading music. I don't really try hard to do anything. Neither do many other people. Walking into the common room and being greeted by 100 teenagers slumped over chairs, desks, and the floor is not an unusual occurrence. It's like everyone's been gassed. Kent hasn't arrived yet. I head over to Becky and Arlo in the computer corner, who seem to be having a conversation about whether Michael Serra is actually attractive or not. "Tori, Tori, Tori," Becky taps me repeatedly on the arm. "You can back me up on this. You've seen Juno, yeah? You think he's cute, right?" She slaps her hands against her cheeks and her eyes kind of roll backward. "Awkward boys are the hottest, aren't they?" I place my hands on her shoulders. "Stay calm, Rebecca. Not everyone loves the Sarah like you do." She starts to babble on about Scott Pilgrim versus the world, but I'm not really listening. Michael Serra is not the Michael I'm thinking about. I somehow excuse myself from this discussion and begin to patrol the common room. Yes, that's right. I'm looking for Michael Holden. At this point, I'm not really sure why I am looking for him. As I've probably already implied, I do not get interested in very many things, particularly people. But it irritates me when someone thinks that they can start a conversation and then just get up and leave. It's rude, you know? I pass all the common room cliques. Cliques are a very high school musical concept, but the reason they are so cliché is because they really do exist. In a predominantly all-girls school, you can pretty much expect each year to be divided into three main categories. 1. Loud, experienced girls who use fake IDs to get into clubs, wear a lot of things that they see on blogging sites, frequently pretend to starve themselves, enjoy a good bit of orange tan, socially or addictively smoke, are open to drugs, know a lot about the world. I very much disapprove of these people. 2. Strange girls who appear to have no real concept of dressing well or controlling their freakish behaviour, examples being drawing on each other with whiteboard pens and being physically unable to wash their hair. Girls who somehow end up with boyfriends who are just as terrifying as they are. Girls who on average have a mental age at least 3 years younger than their physical age. These girls sadden me greatly, because often I feel that they could be very normal if they put in some effort. 3. So-called normal girls. Approximately half of these have steady, average boyfriends, are aware of fashion trends and popular culture, usually pleasant, some quiet, some loud, enjoy being with friends, enjoy a good party, enjoy shopping and movies, enjoy life. I'm not saying that everyone fits into one of these groups. I love that there are exceptions, because I hate that these groups exist. I mean, I don't know where I'd go. I suppose I'd be group 3, because that's definitely what our lot are. Then again, I don't feel very similar to anyone from our lot. I don't feel very similar to anyone at all. I circle the room 3 or 4 times before concluding that he's not here. Whatever. Maybe I just imagined Michael Holden. It's not like I care anyway. I go back to our lot's corner, slump onto the floor at Becky's feet, and close my eyes. The common room door swings open as Mr. Kent, deputy head, strides into the crowd, followed by his usual posse, Miss Stresser, who is too young and too pretty to be any kind of teacher, and our head girl, Zelda Okoro, I'm not even joking. Her name really is that fantastic. Kent is a sharply angled sort of man, most often noted for his startling resemblance to Alan Rickman, and is probably the only teacher in this school to hold true intelligence. He is also my English teacher, and has been for over 5 years, so we actually know each other fairly well. That's probably a bit weird. We do have a headmistress, Mrs. Lemaire, who is widely rumoured to be a member of the French government, explaining why she never appears to be present in her own school.
"I want some quiet," says Kent, standing in front of an interactive whiteboard which hangs on the wall just below our school motto.
Confortamini in domino et in potentia virtutis eius. The sea of grey uniforms turns to face him. For a few moments, Kent says nothing. He does this a lot. Becky and I grin at each other and start counting the seconds. This is a game we play. I can't remember when it started, but every single time we're in assembly or a sixth form meeting or whatever, we count the length of his silences. Our record is 79 seconds. No joke. When we hit 12 and Kent opens his mouth to speak, music begins to play out of the loudspeaker. It's the Darth Vader theme from Star Wars. An instant uneasiness soars over the sixth form. People turn their heads wildly from side to side, whispering, wondering why Kent would play music through the loudspeaker, and why Star Wars. Perhaps Kent is going to start lecturing us on communicating with clarity, or persistence, or empathy and understanding, or skills of interdependence, which are what most of the sixth form meetings are about. Perhaps he's trying to make a point about the importance of leadership. Only when the pictures begin to appear on the screen behind him do we realize what is, in fact, going on. First, it's Kent's face photoshopped into Yoda's. Then it's Kent as Jabba the Hutt. Then it's Princess Kent in a golden bikini. The entire sixth form bursts into uncontrollable laughter. The real Kent, stern-faced but keeping his cool, marches out of the room. As soon as Strasser similarly disappears, people begin to tear from group to group, reliving the look in Kent's eyes when his face appeared on Natalie Portman's, complete with white Photoshop face paint and an extravagant hairdo. I have to admit, it's kind of funny. After Kent, Darth Maul, leaves the screen, and as the orchestral masterpiece draws up to its climax through the speakers above our heads, the interactive whiteboard displays the following words. Solitaire.co.uk. Becky brings the site up on a computer, and our lot cluster around to have a good look. The troll blog has one post now, uploaded 2 minutes ago. A photo of Kent staring in passive anger at the board. We all start talking. Well, everyone else does. I just sit there.
Some kid probably thought it was clever, snorts Becky. They probably came up with it on their blogs and thought they'd take pictures and prove to their hipster friends how hilarious and rebellious they are.
Well, yeah, it is clever, says Evelyn, her long-established superiority complex making its regular appearance.
It's standing up to the man.
I shake my head, because nothing is clever about it apart from the skill of the person who managed to morph Kent's face into Yoda's. That is Photoshop talent. Lauren is grinning widely. Lauren Romley is a social smoker and has a mouth slightly too large for her face.
I can see the Facebook statuses already. This has probably broken my Twitter feed.
I need a photo of this on my blog, continues Evelyn. I could do with a couple of thousand more followers.
Go away, Evelyn, snorts Lauren. You're already internet famous.
This makes me laugh. Just post another photo of your legs, Evelyn. I say quietly. They already get reblogged like 20,000 times. Only Becky hears me. She grins at me and I grin back, which is sort of nice, because I rarely think of funny things to say. And that's it. That's pretty much all we say about it. 10 minutes and it's forgotten. To tell you the truth, though, this prank has made me feel kind of weird. The fact of the matter is that Star Wars was actually a major obsession of mine when I was a kid. I guess I haven't watched any of the films for a few years now, but hearing that music brings back something. I don't know what. Some feeling in my chest. Ugh, I'm getting sentimental. I bet whoever did this is really pleased with themselves. It kind of makes me hate them. 5 minutes later, I've just about dozed off, my head on the computer desk and my arms barricading my face from all forms of social interaction, when somebody pats me on the shoulder. I jerk upward and gaze blearily in the direction of the pat. Becky's looking at me oddly, purple strands cascading around her. She blinks. What? I ask. She points behind her, so I look. A guy is standing there, nervous, face in a sort of grinning grimace. I realize what's going on, but my brain doesn't quite accept that this is possible. So I open my mouth and close it 3 times before coming up with, Jesus Christ. The guy steps toward me. Victoria? Excluding my new acquaintance, Michael Holden, only 2 people in my life have ever called me Victoria. One is Charlie, and the other is... Lucas Ryan, I say. I once knew a boy named Lucas Ryan. He cried a lot, but liked Pokemon just as much as I did. So I guess that made us friends. He once told me he would like to live inside a giant bubble when he grew up, because you could fly everywhere and see everything. And I told him that would make a terrible house because bubbles are always empty inside. He gave me a Batman key ring for my 8th birthday, a how-to-draw manga book for my 9th birthday, Pokemon cards for my 10th birthday, and a t-shirt with a tiger on it for my 11th. I sort of have to do a double take, because his face is now an entirely different shape. He'd always been smaller than me, but now he is at least a whole head taller, and his voice, obviously, has broken. I start to look for things that are the same as 11-year-old Lucas Ryan, but all I've got to go on is his dull blonde hair, skinny limbs, and awkward expression. Also, he is the blonde guy in skinny trousers. Jesus Christ, I repeat. Hi. He smiles and laughs. I remember the laugh. It's all in the chest. A chest laugh. Hi, he says, and smiles some more. A nice smile. A calm smile. I dramatically leap to my feet and look him up and down. It's actually him. It's actually you, I say, and have to physically restrain myself from reaching out and patting him on the shoulders, just to check he's really there and all. He laughs again. His eyes go all squinty. It's actually me. Why? He starts to look kind of embarrassed. I remember him being like that. I left Truham at the end of last term, he says. I knew you went here. So, he fiddles with his collar. He used to do that, too. I thought I'd try to find you, seeing as I don't have any friends here, so, yes. Hello. I think you should be aware that I have never been very good at making friends, and primary school was no different. I acquired only the one friend during those 7 years of mortifying social rejection. Yet while my primary school days are not days that I would choose to relive, there was one good thing that probably kept me going, and that was the quiet friendship of Lucas Ryan.
Wow! Becky, unable to keep away from potential gossip, intervenes. How do you two know each other?
Now, I am a fairly awkward person, but Lucas really takes the biscuit. He turns to Becky and goes red again, and I almost feel embarrassed for him.
Primary school, I say. We were best friends.
Becky's shaped eyebrows soar.
No way! She looks at both of us once more before focusing on Lucas.
Well, I guess I'm your replacement. I'm Becky.
She gestures around her. Welcome to the land of oppression.
Lucas, in a mouse voice, manages.
I'm Lucas.
He turns back to me.
We should catch up, he says.
Is this what friendship reborn feels like?
Yes, I say.
The shock is draining my vocabulary.
Yes.
People have started to give up on the sixth form meeting, as it's the start of period one, and no teachers have returned. Lucas nods at me.
I don't really want to be late to my first lesson or anything. This whole day is going to be kind of embarrassing as it is. But I'll talk to you sometime soon, yeah? I'll find you on Facebook.
Becky stares in relatively severe disbelief as Lucas wanders away and grabs me firmly on the shoulder.
Tori just talked to a boy. No, Tori just held a conversation by herself. I think I'm going to cry.
There, there. I pat her on the shoulder. Be strong. You'll get through this.
I'm extremely proud of you. I feel like a proud mum.
I snort. I can hold conversations by myself. What do you call this?
I am the only exception. With everyone else, you're about as sociable as a cardboard box.
Maybe I am a cardboard box. We both laugh.
It's funny. Because it's true, I say.
And I laugh again. On the outside, at least. Ha, ha, ha.
Chapter 3.
The first thing I do when I get home from school is collapse onto my bed and turn on my laptop. This happens every single day. If I'm not at school, you can guarantee that my laptop will be somewhere within a 2-meter radius of my heart. My laptop is my soulmate. Over the past few months, I've come to realize that I am far more of a blog than an actual person. I don't know when this blogging thing started, and I don't know when or why I signed up to this website, but I can't seem to remember what I did before. And I don't know what I'd do if I deleted it. I severely regret starting this blog, I really do. It's pretty embarrassing. But the only place where I ever find people who are sort of like me is on these blogs. People talk about themselves here in ways that people don't in real life. If I delete it, I think I'll probably be completely alone. I don't blog to get more blog followers or whatever. I'm not Evelyn. It's just that it's not socially acceptable to say depressing stuff out loud in the real world because people think that you're attention-seeking. I hate that. So what I'm saying is that it's nice to be able to say whatever I want, even if it is only on the internet. After waiting 100 billion years for my internet to load, I spend a good while on my blog. There are a couple of cheesy anonymous messages. A few of my followers get all worked up about some of the pathetic stuff I post. Then I check Facebook. 2 notifications. Lucas and Michael have sent friend requests. I accept both. Then I check my email. No emails. And then I check the Solitaire blog again. It's still got the photo of Kent looking hilariously passive, but apart from that, The only addition to the blog is the title. It now reads, Solitaire. Patience kills. I don't know what these solitaire people are trying to do, but Patience Kills is the stupidest imitation of some James Bond film title that I have ever heard. It sounds like an online betting website. I take the solitaire.co.uk post-it out of my pocket and place it precisely in the centre of the only empty wall in my room. I think about what happened today with Lucas Ryan, and for a brief moment, I feel kind of hopeful again. I don't know, whatever. I don't know why I bothered with this. I don't even know why I followed those post-its into that computer room. I don't know why I do anything, for God's sake. Eventually, I find the will to get up and plod downstairs to get a drink. Mum's in the kitchen on the computer. She's very much like me, if you think about it. She's in love with Microsoft Excel the way I'm in love with Google Chrome. She asks me how my day was, and I just shrug and say that it was fine, because I'm fairly sure that she doesn't care what my answer is. It's because we're so similar that we stop talking to each other so much. When we do talk, we either struggle to find things to say, or we just get angry. So apparently we've reached a mutual agreement that there's really no point trying anymore. I'm not too bothered. My dad's quite chatty, even if everything he says is extraordinarily irrelevant to my life. And I've still got Charlie. The house phone rings. Get that, would you? Says Mum. I hate the phone. It is the worst invention in the history of the world, because if you don't talk, nothing happens. You can't get by with simply listening and nodding your head in all the right places. You have to talk. You have no option. It takes away my freedom of non-speech. I pick it up anyway, because I'm not a horrible daughter. Hello, I say.
Tori, it's me.
It's Becky.
Why the hell are you answering the phone?
I decided to rethink my attitude toward life and become an entirely different person.
Say again?
Why are you calling me? You never call me.
I need to talk to you urgently.
There is a pause. I expect her to continue, but she seems to be waiting for me to speak.
Okay. It's Jack.
Ah. Becky has called about her almost boyfriend, Jack. She does this to me very often. Not call me, I mean. Ramble at me about her various almost boyfriends. While Becky is talking, I put ums and yes and oh my gods where they need to be. Her voice fades a little as I drift away and picture myself as her. As a lovely, happy, hilarious girl who gets invited to at least two parties a week and can start up a conversation within 2 seconds. I picture myself entering a party. Throbbing music, everyone with a bottle in their hand. Somehow, there's a crowd around me. I'm laughing. I'm the center of attention. Eyes light up in admiration as I tell another of my hysterically embarrassing stories. Perhaps a drunk story, or an ex-boyfriend story, or simply a time that I did something remarkable, and everyone wonders how I managed to have such an eccentric, adventurous, carefree adolescence. Everyone hugs me. Everyone wants to know what I've been up to. When I dance, people dance. When I sit down, ready to tell secrets, people form a circle. When I leave, the party fades away and dies, like a forgotten dream.
You can guess what I'm talking about, she says.
I really can't.
A few weeks ago, God, I should have told you this, we had sex.
I sort of freeze up, because this takes me by surprise. Then I realize that this has been coming for a long time. I'd always kind of respected Becky for being a virgin, which is kind of pretentious if you think about it. I mean, we're all at least 16 now and Becky's nearly 17. It's fine if you want to have sex. I don't care, it's not a crime. But the fact that we were both virgins, I don't know. I guess it made us equal in a twisted way. And now here I am, second place in something else. Well, there is literally nothing I can say about this. Okay. You're judging me. You think I'm a slut. I don't. I can tell. You're using your judgmenty voice. I'm not. There's a pause. What do you say to something like that? Well done. Good job. She starts explaining how Jack has this friend who would supposedly be perfect for me. I think that is unlikely unless he is entirely mute, blind, or deaf. Or all three. Once I get off the phone, I sort of stand there in the kitchen. Mum's still clicking away at the computer. And I start to feel, again, like this whole day has been pointless. An image of Michael Holden appears in my head, and then an image of Lucas Ryan, and then an image of the solitaire blog. I decide that I need to talk to my brother. I pour myself some diet lemonade and leave the kitchen. My brother, Charles Spring, is 15 years old and a year 11 at Truham Grammar. In my opinion, he is the nicest person in the history of the universe. And I know that nice is kind of a meaningless word, but that is what makes it so powerful. It's very hard to simply be a nice person, because there are a lot of things that can get in the way. When he was little, he refused to throw out any of his possessions, because to him, they were all special. Every baby book, every outgrown t-shirt, every useless board game. He kept them all in sky-high piles in his room because everything supposedly had some kind of meaning. When I asked about a particular item, he'd tell me how he found it at the beach, or how it was a hand-me-down from our nan, or how he bought it when he was 6 at London Zoo. Mum and Dad got rid of most of that rubbish when he got ill last year. I guess he sort of got obsessed with it. And he got obsessed with a whole load of other things, too. Mainly food and collecting things. And it really started to tear him apart. But that's all over now. He's better. But he's still the same kid who thinks everything is special. That's the sort of guy Charlie is. In the living room, it is extremely unclear what Charlie, his boyfriend Nick, and my other brother, Oliver, are doing. They've got these cardboard boxes, and I mean, there's like 50 of them piled up all over the room. Oliver, who is 7 years old, appears to be directing the operation as Nick and Charlie build up the boxes to make some kind of shed-sized sculpture. The piles of boxes reach the ceiling. Oliver has to stand on the sofa to be able to oversee the entire structure. Eventually, Charlie walks around the small cardboard building and notices me staring in from the doorway. Victoria! I blink at him. Shall I bother asking? He gives me this look as if I should know exactly what is going on. We're building a tractor for Oliver. I nod. Of course. Yes, that's very clear. Nick appears. Nicholas Nelson. A year 12 like me, is one of those laddish lads who actually is into all those stereotypical things like rugby and beer and swearing and all that. But he also has the most successful combination of name and surname I have ever heard, which makes it impossible for me to dislike him. I can't really remember when Nick and Charlie became Nick and Charlie, but Nick is the only one who visited Charlie when he was ill. So in my books, he's definitely all right. Tory,
He nods at me, very seriously indeed. Good. We need more free labour.
Tori, can you get the Sotch tape? Oliver calls down.
Except he says Sotch tape instead of Scotch tape because he recently lost two front teeth. I pass Oliver the Sotch tape, then point toward the boxes, and ask Charlie,
where did you get all of these?
Charlie just shrugs and walks away, saying, they're Oliver's, not mine. So that's how I end up building a cardboard tractor in our living room. When we're finished, Charlie, Nick and I sit inside it to admire our work. Oliver goes around the tractor with a marker pen, drawing on the wheels, the mud stains, and the machine guns, in case the cows join the dark side. It's sort of peaceful, to be honest. Every box has a big black arrow printed on it pointing upward. Charlie is telling me about his day. He loves telling me about his day. Saunders asked us who our favourite musicians were, and I said Muse, and three people asked me if I liked them because of Twilight. Apparently, no one believes that it is possible to have an original interest. I frown. I would like to meet a boy who has actually seen Twilight. Do you not both live in the realm of the FA Cup and Family Guy? Nick sighs. Tori, you are generalising again. Charlie rolls his head through the air toward him. Nicholas, you mainly watch the FA Cup and Family Guy, let's be honest. Sometimes I watch the Six Nations. We all chuckle, and then there's a short, unawkward silence, in which I lie down and look up at the cardboard ceiling. I start to tell them about today's prank, and that leads me to thinking about Lucas and Michael Holden. I met Lucas Ryan again today, I say. I don't mind telling this sort of stuff to Nick and Charlie. He joined our school. Nick and Charlie blink at the same time. Lucas Ryan? As in primary school, Lucas Ryan? Charlie frowns.
Lucas Ryan left Truham? Nick frowns too. Balls! I was going to copy off him in our psychology mock.
I nod to both of them. It was good to see him, you know? Because we can be friends again, I guess. He was always so nice to me. They both nod back. It's a knowing sort of nod. I also met some guy called Michael Holden. Nick, who had been in the middle of taking a sip of tea, chokes into his cup. Charlie grins widely and starts to giggle.
What? Do you know him?
Nick recovers enough to speak, though still coughs every few words.
Michael fucking Holden. Shit, he'll go down in Truham legend.
Charlie lowers his head but keeps his eyes on me.
Don't become friends with him. He's probably insane. Everyone avoided him at Truham because he's mentally disturbed.
Patting Charlie on the knee, Nick says, then again, I made friends with a mental person, and that turned out pretty spectacular. Charlie snorts and slaps away Nick's hand.
Do you remember when he tried to get everyone to do a flash mob for the Year 11 prank? Says Nick. And in the end he just did it by himself on the lunch tables.
What about when he gave a speech on the injustice of authority for his Year 12 prefect speech? Says Charlie.
Just because he got detentions for having that argument with Mr. Yates during his mock exams.
Both he and Nick laugh heartily.
This confirms my suspicion that Michael Holden is not the sort of person with whom I would like to be friends. Ever. Charlie looks up at Nick.
He's gay, isn't he? I heard he's gay.
Nick shrugs. Well, I heard that he figure skates, so it's not entirely impossible. Charlie frowns.
I thought we knew all the Truham gays.
They pause and both look at me.
Listen, says Nick, gesturing sincerely to me with one hand. Lucas Ryan's a cool guy, but there's something wrong with Michael Holden. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he was behind that prank. The thing is, I don't think that Nick is right. I don't have any evidence to support this. I'm not even sure why I think this. Maybe it was something about the way Michael Holden spoke, like he believed everything he said. Maybe it was how sad he was when I showed him the empty solitaire blog. Or maybe it was something else, something that doesn't make sense, like the colours of his eyes, or his ridiculous side part, or how he managed to get that post-it note into my hand when I can't even remember our skin touching. Maybe it's just because he's too wrong. As I'm thinking this, Oliver enters the tractor and sits down in my lap. I pat him affectionately on the head and give him what's left of my diet lemonade, because Mum doesn't let him drink it. I don't know, I say. To be honest, I bet it was just some twat with a blog. Chapter 4. I'm late because Mum thought I said 8. I said 7:30. How can you confuse 8 with 7:30? Whose birthday is it? She asks while we're in the car. No one's. We're just meeting up. Do you have enough money? I can sub you. I've got £15. Will Becky be there? Yep. And Lauren and Evelyn? Probably. When I speak to my parents, I don't actually sound very grumpy. I'm usually quite cheerful sounding when I talk. I'm good at that. It's Tuesday. Evelyn organized some start of term thing at Pizza Express. I don't really want to go, but I think it's important to make the effort, social convention and all. I say hello to the people who notice my entrance and sit at the end of the table. I nearly die when I realize that Lucas is here. I know already that I'm going to find it difficult to think of things to say to him. I successfully avoided him for the rest of yesterday and all of today for this exact reason. Obviously, Evelyn, Lauren, and Becky took the opportunity to make him the boy of our group. Having a boy in your social group is the equivalent of having a house with a pool, or a designer shirt with the logo on it, or a Ferrari.